Right, we're here. SEC Media Days. Neil McCready, Rebel Grove. What's up, Neil?
Michael, it's always good to visit with you. I enjoyed spending some time with you in Nashville. Good to be with you here in Dallas.
And what do you know? Shane finally showed up. Shane, Neil.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys are getting a little low there, so I had to get some before I withered away here. Thank you for joining. No, sorry, I was late.
Appreciate you guys spending some time with me.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask. I'll start by asking you guys a question.
Yeah.
There's a ton of Ole Miss hype. People here, I'm having a hard time finding anybody that's not picking Ole Miss to go to the playoff. Is that, in your opinion, is that because they're a trendy pick and everybody's just doing the trendy thing? Or is that because people genuinely believe this is a championship caliber, CFP caliber roster?
Well, I've been on record since, I'd say, January, that I think this is a playoff team. And I'll go a step further with all the additions and guys getting back. That gets overlooked, guys returning. More importantly, I think Ole Miss is a national championship contender. Now, I clearly don't think they're the favorite to do it, but I think it certainly can be done. And, I mean, that Georgia game will be massive. It's so funny, Neil. In this league, it's Ole Miss got whooped by Georgia. That's what it was.
Yeah.
But people just, I don't get it. They just say, well, we whooped them last year. There's no chance that's a game this year. Every year there's evidence otherwise.
Yeah.
Tennessee beat the hell out of Missouri 2 years in a row. Missouri turned around last year, completely crushed Tennessee. It's not that hard to see that happening.
You know, there's no question that last year in Athens, Georgia kicked Ole Miss's ass. There's no way around that. But the interesting part to me, to your point, is that that was the very first thing Lane Kiffin said. In fact, if you go back and listen to Lane, he says in pregame, they were looking at the Georgia team warming up compared to his team warming up and said, we have to look more like them. We've got to have that size. We've got to have that length. That's what we've got to go get in the transfer portal. And they did. That's what's interesting. Now, look, Georgia's the best team in the league. Georgia's the best team in the country. Yeah. If someone goes, pull your wallet out and put everything you've got on one team and you put it on anybody other than Georgia, you're an idiot. But Ole Miss is better. I think they clearly addressed that. They're bigger up front on the offensive line, taller. And then defensively, they added Walter Nolan. They added Princely Amamielen. They added Chris Hardy. And especially with those first two, those are guys that are in kind of contract years. This is a big year for Walter Nolan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Walter Nolan's a top 10 pick if he has a great season. He's not a top 10 pick if he doesn't. Kind of the same for Princely a little bit. So they added guys with something to prove on a defense that you know, they return Jared Ivey, they return J.J. Pegues. There's a lot up front. Are they Georgia good up front? Well, no, but kind of nobody is. But they could be significantly better than they were a year ago, and not just specifically to that game, but you know, that game was in Georgia last year. It will be in Oxford this year. You'd obviously rather have the game in Oxford if you're Ole Miss than in Athens. Nobody was beating Georgia that night. They were really, really good. But Ole Miss addressed an issue. That game led to a moment of reckoning inside their program that I think they've answered.
Yeah. And in a season of so much, you know, first year with no divisions, with Oklahoma and Texas, there's so many narratives, people are, you know, the unknowns basically is what I'm trying to get at. But one I think is being massively under discussed that I think will truly help Ole Miss maybe more than any other program is the in-helmet communication. And Kiffin suggested as much in the spring, just having Lane Kiffin and Jackson Dart's here, and hell, you could even say Pete Golding with it. I mean, it's going to help everybody, but I truly think the pace, the tempo Ole Miss goes, I think that'll really, really give an edge to the Rebels.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a helpful thing. I'm curious a little bit because they go so fast already. Like, how much faster can you really go, right? I mean, and because at some point you can go too fast, mm-hmm. where you're wearing out your offensive line. Guys don't have any juice left by the third, fourth quarter. You're going so fast that it leads to mistakes. But here's where I think it's a huge advantage. Kiffin probably more than anybody in the college game is elite, almost to the point of it being like Rain Man sort of, right? Elite at looking at the defense and seeing something instantly. And now he doesn't have to signal it or do that whistle thing. At least for a few seconds, he's going to be right in Jackson Dart's ear. where he can say whatever terminology or whatever they see. And I do think that's going to be a particular advantage. You're going to have his voice in the helmet for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. I guess they'll close it out at, what, 15 seconds?
15, I think.
Ole Miss is running most of their plays long before 15 seconds. And yeah. So now you've got Kiffin talking in his ear, not having to blow a whistle where Jackson looks over and they signal in a new play and then he's got to relay that play. Now it's much more streamlined, which might allow them to go a little faster, but more importantly, allow them to always sort of be in the play that Kiffin wants them to be in.
Yeah, I think it's not just the speed. It's not wasting a timeout now because maybe your offense is in the wrong spot. It's just a hold. You got 15 seconds to adjust, call a new play like you said, and you didn't waste a timeout. So, yeah, I think it's a huge benefit for at least Lane Kiffin and company.
Yeah, I think it's one of the advantages Ole Miss has is that it's a third-year quarterback with the same head coach, the same offensive coordinator. In today's college football, with all of the transfer portals and coaches leave and stuff, coordinators leave, not too many teams have that level of continuity.
Yeah.
And for Ole Miss to have it, particularly on that side of the ball with a quarterback like Dart, I think it's a tremendous advantage for them going into this third season. Because I think if you go back and look at last season, you can see where Dart made some strides. And especially the second half of the season, protecting the football, making good decisions. By the Peach Bowl game, his decision-making was pretty strong. If he makes another step up in that, well, he moves into that elite category. And if he's not turning the ball over and he's making good decisions and they're running, they're getting into the sets that they want to get into, they'll be dangerous.
Could you see Ole Miss, they've been so good, effective on the ground under Kiffin, but could you see this being the year where they're a little bit more pass-friendly due to the running back? They got good running backs, but I think they maybe have the best two receivers in the entire SEC. Trey Harris, Juice Wells, and Deion Smith. Who knows what's going on there? I think Caden Priestborn is probably a top three tight end in the league, too.
Yeah, I think Luther Burden, the third, would have something to say about the wide receiver thing. But I'm with you on Trey Harris. Juice Wells is kind of an unknown. He didn't play a lot last season after he got hurt at Carolina. You know, he didn't leave on the greatest of terms because mm-hmm. I think they thought he was ready to play, and he said he wasn't. I agree with you on Priestcorn. Ole Miss also added Daquan Wright from the transfer portal, give him some depth at tight end. It's kind of a complicated thing at running back for them because obviously they lost Quinshon Judkins, who is an elite running back. I've been saying this all week. He was a big pain in the ass off the field, but on the field he was very effective. And you do have to replace his productivity on the field. And, you know, Kiffin gets that reputation for being this pass-happy, throw-it-all. That's not really what they do, man. They run the ball. I mean, they've been at the top of the league or near the top of the league in rushing just about every season. I mean, throw the COVID year out because who knows what that was. But the last 3 years, they've been very good at running the football. And so I think he loves to run the ball. He loves to keep teams off balance with that. And they've got some backs. They're going to have to do it by committee. But, yeah, I do think they're going to lean on Dart in the passing game a little bit more and maybe take some shots, especially if they can keep Jackson healthy. By the end of last season, he wasn't particularly healthy. I mean, he was kind of limited, and that did change what they tried to do a little bit. But, I mean, it's potential, yeah, where they open it up and sling it around.
Well, I know this sounds crazy, but on that note, do you think those first 4 weeks – you talk about a favorable schedule.
Yeah.
Ole Miss has it. Do you think that we see a little bit more reserve with Dart, maybe the start of the season because of that? I mean, we got Furman, MTSU, Wake Forest, and Georgia Southern, followed by Kentucky, South Carolina. I mean, it's a pretty good start there for them to kind of go easy with Jackson Dart, especially his mobility.
Now he's a competitive guy, so he's going to want to run the ball. But, yeah, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of quarterback design runs against Georgia Southern. That would be idiotic. There's no such thing as an easy SEC schedule. But it's as favorable of a schedule, with the exception of Missouri, because I think Missouri's is even more favorable than Ole Miss's. But it's a... You couldn't draw it up much better. I mean, I guess you could trade Georgia and pick up Vanderbilt, and you'd enjoy that trade. But, you know, that's not realistic. They have, what, three games that everyone kind of circles as that's losable.
Yeah.
You know, Oklahoma at home, at LSU, obviously Georgia at home.
Right.
Georgia hasn't lost a regular season game in 3 years. But, you know, I think they're better than Oklahoma. They haven't won in Tiger Stadium since 2008. I don't know that that really matters on game day. In fact, I don't think it does. It just tells you how good LSU is typically at home. But it's a doable game. Yeah. I mean, you know, they could easily be 6-0 when they go to LSU and they get an open date after LSU and then Oklahoma at home. I mean, it's as favorable as you're going to get in the league. I mean, no one's going to just, you know, roll out the red carpet and go, here's the path to the playoff, but they're kind of close to that. I mean, I think Missouri kind of got that, you know. Missouri got a, here is a clean path. If you'll just stay on the path, you're there. But, yeah.
You even asked at the start, you know, why everyone's so high on Ole Miss, and a lot of that has to do with the scheduling, not just the talent coming back. But I think you hit the nail on the head. You look at that LSU-Oklahoma, and you got a bye week right in the middle of it. You got to win one of them. You know, I mean, if you're just predicting, because we've done a million predictions of what we thought the season's going to be. But like you said, LSU, Oklahoma, Georgia, those are going to be the three games. I think if you lose all three of them, you're not getting in.
No.
But if you lose two of them, there's still a possibility, and I think you got to have a win between either LSU or Oklahoma there.
All right, so let me ask you all this because I'm curious. I've heard a lot of different opinions, and we don't know the answer because it's the first time with 12 teams in the playoff, right?
Yeah.
Gut feeling. How many SEC teams get in? Is the SEC four the baseline or is three the baseline?
I think at least four.
I think four.
And I think even pushing five.
You and I are on the same page. Yeah. I've talked to a lot of people this week who are like, yeah, they're going to get three, maybe four. Four is going to be tough. And I'm like, no, it's not. I mean, they would have gotten four last year.
Yeah.
You know, Missouri and Ole Miss would have made it.
But the problem is there's 10 that expect to be there in this conference right now.
At least eight. I think
maybe seven or eight. I would be right there.
I mean, you know, the teams that I think expect to be there are, you know, Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, Missouri, Tennessee, probably Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we do this every year, and it's like you're setting yourself up to look like an idiot. But, you know, in a world where if, capital I, capital F, if Texas A&M beat Notre Dame, go check out their schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a shot to be in sky high undefeated when Missouri comes in. Well, you beat Missouri, and again, if, capital I, capital F, well, now this thing's pretty navigable for them. And they don't have all the Jimbo stuff hanging over them. They new coach, kind of a clean slate. People feel good. It's still a talented roster. I like their quarterback. So you could put them in. Now, anybody after that, they're smoking stuff. I mean, Florida.
Well, I don't think you
Arkansas.
Mentioned LSU even, did you?
Did I not mention LSU? I guess I did.
You throw them in there as well.
There you go.
And it's funny, too, because they give us all these brochures when we check in about, you know, the predictions and stuff like that. I was looking at 2002. Tennessee was projected number one. They finished fifth in the East. You know? Yeah. So, I mean, we're sitting here in July trying to predict if LSU, Oklahoma are going to be as good as we think they are. And we may be totally wrong.
Yeah, I mean, someone's going to disappoint.
Yeah.
And someone's going to surprise. I mean, someone's going to be one of those, like, bottom six teams is going to be better than we think they're going to be. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to be competing for a championship, but someone that we're saying is going to win four games is going to win six or seven.
Yeah.
Do you appreciate the fact that, like Lane Kiffin, I'm sure you heard what he had to say the other day, but he was asked about Chris Poupal, and I think what he said basically was, we like what we saw. As soon as he hit free agency, we went and got him. That he calls it free agency, because that's what it is. Most of these guys won't say things like that.
Oh, it's like the coach at Colorado State, Norvell.
Yeah.
you know, was talking about tampering. And you're like, yeah, Jay, they're tampered. Everybody tampers. If you're not tampering, what the hell are you doing? I mean,
meanwhile, his agent is probably trying to get him a better deal.
Look, here's the thing. Yeah, do I give Lane credit for that? Absolutely. Let's quit. I mean, it's like I give the guy at Baylor, whose name's escaping me right now.
Rule?
Matt Rule.
Dave Aranda.
Yeah. Dave Aranda was asked the other day, hey, what's happened with recruiting? Why are you recruiting so much better? Is that we're paying them? Thank you. Oh, there you go. That's cool. I mean, I don't have an issue with that. It's the game right now.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you have the draft with recruiting, and then you have free agency that is year-round, really. It's not like the NFL where you draft a player in the NFL and you own his rights for a particular number of years, and then, you know, you might put the franchise tag on him, or you might sign into a free agent deal that has a four-year deal with a certain amount of money guaranteed, and as long as you honor the contract, he's your player, unless you trade him or cut him. Yeah. We're there now, except in college football, there is no multi-year contract. Nobody signs anything more than a one-year contract. I mean, Lane says it all the time, and he's right. Can you imagine the NFL if this year you draft Jaden Daniels, right? So Washington gets him for a year, and then he goes, well, you know what? I can make more money in Philadelphia. I'm going to go to Philadelphia. And then after there, he goes, whoa, I can go to Kansas City now and make more money. That would be total chaos.
Right.
And that's where we are. We have total chaos. I mean, we like it because everybody loves college football and everybody loves the school and the traditions and all of that stuff. But when you talk about just the football and the system that's in play, it's totally chaotic.
Yeah.
It's nonsensical. You don't do this at any professional sport. It's why I give Lane a lot of credit, because he used to say, just kind of as this throwaway line, well, college football's become pro sports. And it drove me crazy, because I'm like, no, it's not pro sports. You know, like, I think I told you this. We were talking when we were in Nashville. I'm a big Oklahoma City Thunder fan. My son Carson's a big Thunder fan. Well, the Thunder have players that they draft. They could potentially keep Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for 9 seasons. Chet Holmgren for 9 seasons. And maybe beyond that, right? There's nothing like that. They have a structure. I mean, Oklahoma City is the smallest market in the league. Chet Holmgren would be a superstar in Los Angeles, but he can't just pick up and go to Los Angeles because the Lakers give him more money. No, in fact, there's a complete salary structure where the way it's set up for him to make the most money for the first 9 years of his career is staying in Oklahoma City. Literally, if he goes to another market, he can't make what he would make in Oklahoma City for 9 years. Now, maybe he could make more off the court, that kind of thing. But we don't have that in college football. We don't have any structure at all. I mean, Jackson Dart could have left in the spring and just said, hey, I'm going to go to Michigan or Notre Dame, wherever.
Right.
Right? I mean, nothing would have stopped him. I mean, what a story that would have been.
Yeah.
It's insanity.
What happens to Ole Miss NIL-wise if they go 8-4?
Oh, I think it's what people there – and, hey, look, probably people in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Like, we could probably apply that question to, you know – ton of places. What happens at Oklahoma if they go 7-5 in year one in the SEC? Is what happens to their NIL?
Right.
What happens at Alabama if they go 8-4 and people go, well, turns out it was Saban.
Right.
These are hypotheticals. But no, I think it's more than fair. Like, what happens at Ole Miss if they spend all of this money in the transfer portal to put together this roster that they feel is stacked, and then lose some of the close games that they won a year ago? Because go back and look at last season. They were in trouble at Tulane. LSU was just an absolute back and forth coin toss type of a game. Jaden Daniels made a mistake in the first quarter. Otherwise, maybe LSU wins. And even as it was, LSU had the ball in the air with the chance to win on the final play of the game.
Yeah.
Ole Miss trailed Arkansas in the fourth quarter. Texas A&M was lined up to kick a game-tying field goal that Ole Miss blocked. Ole Miss flirted with a little trouble against Auburn, at Auburn. I mean, you know, what if they lose a couple of those games, right? We're not having this conversation today, perhaps. So, to answer to your question, 8-4, do people go, well, you know what? I was already giving a little more than I wanted to give. Now that this doesn't work, no, I'm not going to do that. What happens to the economy? What happens in the election? There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, and yeah, it's a legitimate question about Ole Miss. It's probably a legitimate question about almost all of the teams in the SEC and around college football.
Well, I think that's where we're at. Everybody's dubbed it the last dance. All chips in the middle of the table,
yeah.
And in the back of your mind, even on the opposite side, if it's an 11-1 season, is it sustainable to keep this momentum on that NIL trail?
Yeah, so let's say they go 11-1 for the hypothetical, right? Does that get people so jet? Because 11-1, you're either going to Atlanta or you're hosting a playoff game in Oxford December 20th or 21st, which would be just a circus.
Yeah.
Is that enough of a adrenaline jolt, enough of a runner's high, if you will, that you just are like, yeah, here's my wallet. Here's a blank check. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Probably, at least for a year. But at some point, and I've asked this a few times, like when I say to people that I don't know how sustainable this thing is, what happens when you lose? Not if you lose. What happens when you lose? Look, in this league, look around. Not everybody's going to win this year.
No.
I mean, there's a lot of good teams. You know, there's a world where Florida's a better football team than it was a year ago, and they lose more games.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when you lose? Is it sustainable then? I don't know the answer to all that. I really don't. It's a great question, though.
Yeah.
Because it's what's going to kind of shape the sport. It's why I think you see day one here, Greg Sankey, a guy who basically has been able to get whatever he wanted, been able to build this league into a mega conference, right? Huge TV deals, everything. He spends some of the first few minutes of media days, the day that he's, you know, kind of welcoming Texas and Oklahoma into the league, all but begging for congressional assistance, you know, regulation. I think everyone generally knows that just going to the fans and going, hey, come to campus, buy hotel rooms, buy tickets, pay for food, pay for gas. Oh, and we need more money to help buy players, too.
Right.
At some point, you hit a ceiling on that.
Yeah.
You have a last question to close us out?
Yeah, so who do you think makes the who makes the playoffs out of this league at the end of the year? Who's
Georgia,
playing in the playoffs?
Missouri, Ole Miss, Texas. Alabama.
Oh,
and not Tennessee. Alabama.
Not Texas?
No.
Okay.
Texas, not Alabama. Tennessee. I think Tennessee.
And Georgia.
Well, yeah, Georgia.
Yeah.
they're probably winning the thing, but yeah. I think damn. Now that you say it like that, Tennessee's bubble team. Tennessee. I talked to Ron Slay today, so I got all pumped up. You know, he's got me convinced that we're good. So, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Missouri. I really like. I'm bullish on Missouri for some reason.
Yeah. Did I say Missouri? Missouri would be in there.
Yeah, you said Missouri. Yeah.
You got nine teams in the playoffs.
You don't like Texas. Why?
I really don't. I don't think Sarkisian is an elite coach.
Oh.
And I don't think Quinn Ewers is as good as people seemingly think he is. They were much better on defense than they were offense last year. I don't understand why people don't realize that. They lost their two run stuffers. Every Texas person we talk to says they're more worried about their secondary than their defensive line, with having to replace two top 50 draft picks.
You know what's interesting? If Texas loses that game to Houston last year, that they almost lost, probably should have lost, if they lose that game to Houston this year, if that's all you change, is it a different narrative around the Horns?
Yes, because they would have put Florida State in the playoff aside from them, I would have to think.
Yeah.
But there's two other one possession games that they won. You know, it's kind of like how you were talking about if something went wrong. If they would have lost those three, or if they would have had Alabama week 9, week 10, you know, could they have won that game? So I do think Texas has a little more hype than they probably should coming into this conference, but at the end of the day,
they're replacing everybody at skill positions. And I think fans look at this, you know, adding guys via the portal, and they just think it's like a video game.
Yeah.
Put these guys in, they're awesome. They're great players.
Yeah.
But I think there's going to be a transition there.
Shane, Michael, I appreciate your time. I love y'all's work. Y'all do a great job on that SEC podcast and all that stuff. Everybody talks about it. I love being on with you in Nashville, so thanks for having me.
Before you go, Neil, can you tell our audience how to find you and how to find your work?
Yeah, so MPW Digital. You can get all of our podcasts. We have a daily Ole Miss podcast called Blue Sky Live, and then Tyler Siski and I have McCrady and Siski, which is a crazy show.
Share some great stories all there.
Yeah, 3 days a week starting in August, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, every afternoon. So you can check us out at MPW Digital, also on YouTube, TikTok. Wherever you go, man, just hit the follow button.
Are you the one sending out the talks?
No, we have somebody sending out the talks. No, that's above my pay grade, man.
All right, thank you so much.